except that, if there be nearby lands in the sky and beings from foreign worlds that visit this earth, that is a great subject, and the trash that is clogging an epoch must be cleared away. We have had a little sermon upon the insecurity of human triumphs, and, having brought it to a climax, now seems to be the time to stop, but there is still an involved triumph and I'd not like to have inefficiency, as well as probably everything else, charged against us. The discovery of Uranus. We mention this stimulus to the textbook writer's ecstasies, because out of phenomena of the planet Uranus, the Neptune triumph developed. For Richard Proctor's reasons for arguing that this discovery was not accidental, see Old and New Astronomy, p. 646. Philosophical Transactions, 71-492. A paper by Herschel, an account of a comet discovered on March 13, 1781. A year went by, and not an astronomer in the world knew a new planet when he saw one, then Lexell did find out that the supposed comet was a planet. Statues from which used to drip the lifeblood of a parasitic cult. Structures of parabolas from which bleed equations. As we go along we shall develop the acceptance that astronomers might as well try to squeeze blood from images as to try to seduce symbols into conclusions, because applicable mathematics has no more to do with planetary interactions than have statues of saints. If this denial that the calculi have place in gravitational astronomy be accepted, the astronomers lose their supposed god, they become an unfocused priesthood, the stamina of their arrogance wilts. We begin with the next to the simplest problem in celestial mechanics, that is, the formulation of the interactions of the Sun and the Moon and this Earth. In the highest of mathematics, final, sacred mathematics, can this next to the simplest problem in so-called mathematical astronomy be solved? It cannot be solved. Every now and then, somebody announces that he has solved the problem of the three bodies, but it is always an incomplete, or impressionistic, demonstration, compounded of abstractions, and ignoring the conditions of bodies in space. Over and over we shall find vacancy under supposed achievements, elaborate structures that are pretensions without foundation. Here we learn that astronomers cannot formulate the interactions of three bodies in space, but calculate anyway, and publish what they call the formula of a planet that is interacting with 1,000 other bodies. They explain. It will be one of our most lasting impressions of astronomers, they explain and explain and explain. The astronomers explain that, though in finer terms, the mutual effects of three planets cannot be determined, so dominant is the power of the Sun that all other effects are negligible. Before the discovery of Uranus, there was no way by which the miracles of the astromagicians could be tested. They said that their formulas worked out, and external inquiry was panic-stricken at the mention of a formula. But Uranus was discovered, and the magicians were called upon to calculate his path. They did calculate, and, if Uranus had moved in a regular path, I do not mean to say that astronomers or college boys have no mathematics by which to determine anything so simple. They computed the orbit of Uranus. He went somewhere else. They explained. They computed some more. They went on explaining and computing, year in and year out, and the planet Uranus kept on going somewhere else. Then they conceived of a powerful perturbing force beyond Uranus so then that at the distance of Uranus the Sun is not so dominant, in which case the effects of Saturn upon Uranus and Uranus upon Saturn are not so negligible on through complexes of interactions that infinitely intensify by cumulativeness into a black outlook for the whole brilliant system. The paleoastronomers calculated, and for more than 50 years pointed variously at the sky. Finally two of them, of course agreeing upon the general background of Uranus, pointed within distances that are conventionally supposed to have been about 600 millions of miles of Neptune, and now it is religiously, if not insolently, said that the discovery of Neptune was not accidental. That the test of that which is not accidental is ability to do it again. That it is within the power of anybody, who does not know a hyperbola from a cosine, to find out whether the astronomers are led by a cloud of rubbish by day and a pillar of bosh by night. If, by the magic of his mathematics, any astronomer could have pointed to the position of Neptune, let him point to the planet past Neptune. According to the same reasoning by which a planet past Uranus was supposed to be, a trans-Neptunian planet may be supposed to be. Neptune shows perturbations similar to those of Uranus. According to Professor Todd, there is such a planet, and it revolves around the Sun once in 375 years. There are two, according to Professor Forbes, one revolving once in 1,000 years, and the other once in 5,000 years. See McPherson's A Century's Progress in Astronomy. It exists, according to Dr. Eric Doolittle, and revolves once in 283 years, Psi America, 122-641. According to Mr. Hind, it revolves once in 1,600 years, Smithson. Missile. Calls, 20-20. So then we have found out some things, and, relatively to the oppressed ions that we felt from our opposition, they are reassuring. But also are they depressing? Because, if, in this existence of ours, there is no prestige higher than that of astronomic science, and, if that seeming of substantial renown has been achieved by a composition of bubbles, what of anything like soundness must there be to all lesser reputes and achievements? Let three bodies interact. There is no calculus by which their interactions can be formulated. But there are 1,000 interacting bodies in this solar system or supposed solar system, and we find that the highest prestige in our existence is built upon the tangled assertions that there are magicians who can compute in 1,000 quantities, though they cannot compute in 3. Then all other so-called human triumphs, or moderate successes, products of anybody's reasoning processes and labors, and what are they, if higher than them all, more academic, austere, rigorous, exact are the methods and the processes of the astronomers. What can be thought of our whole existence, its nature, and its destiny? That our existence, a thing within one solar system, or supposed solar system, is a stricken thing that is mulling through space, shocking able-minded, healthy systems with the sores on its sun, its ghastly moons, its civilizations that are all broken out with sciences, a celestial leper, holding out doddering expanses into which charitable systems drop golden comets? If it be the leper's thing that our findings seem to indicate, there is no encouragement for us to go on. We cannot discover, we can only betray new symptoms. If I be a part of such a stricken thing, I know of nothing but sickness and sores and rags to reason with, my data will be pustules, my interpretations will be inflammations. 3. Southern plantations and the woolly heads of Negroes pounding the ground cries in northern regions, and round white faces turned to the sky, fiery globes in the sky a study in black, white, and golden formations in one general glow. Upon the night of November 13th to 14th, 1833, occurred the most sensational celestial spectacle of the 19th century. For 6 hours fiery meteors gushed from the heavens, and were visible along the whole Atlantic coast of the United States. One supposes that astronomers do not pound the ground with their heads, and presumably they do not screech, but they have feelings just the same. They itched. Here was something to formulate. When he hears of something new and unquestionable in the sky, an astronomer is diseased with ill-suppressed equations. Symbols persecute him for expression. His is the frenzy of someone who would stop automobiles, railroad trains, bicycles, all things, to measure them, run, with a yardstick, after sparrows, flies, all persons passing his door. This is supposed to be scientific, but it can be monomaniac. Very likely the distress and the necessity of Professor Olmsted were keenest. He was the first to formulate. He demonstrated that these meteors, known as the Leonids, revolved around the Sun once in 6 months. They didn't. Then Professor Newton demonstrated that the real period was 33 1/4 years. But this was done empirically, and that is not divine, nor even aristocratic, and the thing would have to be done rationally, or mathematically, by someone, because, if there be not mathematical treatment, in gravitational terms, of such phenomena, astronomers are in reduced circumstances. It was Dr. Adams, who, emboldened with his experience in not having to point anywhere near Neptune, but nevertheless being acclaimed by all patriotic Englishmen as the real discoverer of Neptune, mathematically confirmed Professor Newton's findings. Dr. Adams predicted that the Leonids would return in November, 1866, and in November, 1899, occupying several years, upon each occasion, in passing a point in this Earth's orbit. There were meteors upon the night of November 13 to 14, 1866. They were plentiful. They often are in the middle of November. They no more resembled the spectacle of 1833 than an ordinary shower resembles a cloudburst. But the demonstration required that there should be an equal display, or, according to some aspects, a greater display, upon the corresponding night of the next year. There was a display, the next year, but it was in the sky of the United States, and was not seen in England. Another occurrence nothing like that of 1833 was reported from the United States. By conventional theory, this Earth was in a vast, wide stream of meteors, the Earth revolving so as to expose successive parts to bombardment. So keenly did Richard Proctor visualize the Earth so immersed and so bombarded, that, when nothing was seen in England, he explained. He spent most of his life explaining. In The Student, 2-254, he wrote, "Had the morning of November 14, 1867, been clear in England, we should have seen the commencement of the display, but not its more brilliant part."